Well, should the church just get out of the culture wars entirely? Are these things a distraction from our greater role, the Great Commission?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, friends, to the Wednesday broadcast here on The Line of Fire. We often focus on worldview issues on Wednesday, hence Worldview Wednesday. I won't be taking calls today, but I'll make up for it, God willing, tomorrow on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday and Friday. You've got questions, we've got answers. Try to get to even more calls than usual. I want to focus all my attention on this question of the culture wars. Should the church just get out of the culture wars entirely? Isn't this what gets us off of our focus? Isn't this what brings reproach to the name of Jesus? It makes him look bad. Isn't this where we get carnal? Isn't this where we take our eyes off eternal things? Well, there are definitely some problems with the way we often engage in the culture wars. But the idea that it's either Great Commission or culture wars, or that true disciples of Jesus don't get involved in social issues, that's a very wrong way of thinking, and I want to do my best to address it as I fulfill my role here, not just to bring things to your attention, not just to be aware of the times and seasons, but to help you know how to live, to help equip you. There's a comment that I spotted on our Facebook page some months ago. I want to read it again because it was especially insightful and it really blessed me. It was someone who used the name Sci-Fi Eagles Fly on Facebook. So if that his actual name, that'd be unique. But he said this: the more you listen to Dr. Brown, the more you realize that you're an important piece of the puzzle. Exactly. This is not a one-man show here. This is not something where one leader does the work and the others just sit by and pray for him. No, all of us have work to do. All of us have a role. All of us have a commission from God. All of us living out our calling in God would radically impact and shake not only this nation, but the nations as well. So I want to do my best to help equip you to be strong in the Lord so that you can be a world changer in whatever sphere of influence God has given you. Tonight I'll have an article up, so if you check for latest articles, go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Check on latest articles. You'll be able to read an article that will, in short form, deal with what I talk about on the air here. Should Christians get out of the culture wars? But listen to this. Listen to this. President Obama, this is just reported 2 days ago on LifeSiteNews.com. President Obama, speaking based on, quote, my own Christian faith, told the Catholic Evangelical Leadership Summit that churches should spend less time focusing on abortion and same-sex, quote, marriage. The president said, quote, when it comes to what are you really going to the mat for, what's the defining issue? When you're talking in your congregations, what's the thing that is really going to capture the essence of who we are as Christians or as Catholics or what have you? Poverty is oftentimes viewed as a nice-to-have relative to an issue like abortion. In other words, spend more time dealing with issues like poverty, and he even talks about redistribution of wealth, and don't focus so much on abortion and issues of redefining marriage. I take strong exception to that comment, as did many evangelical and Catholic leaders who heard it. And if the president, when he was running for office the first time, said that questions about when life began were above his pay grade, you better believe comments like this, with all respect, sir, they are above your pay grade. Yeah.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire. Hey, remember, friends, tomorrow, Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, I'll be taking your Jewish-related phone calls. Wide ranges of subjects we'll cover relating to Israel, the Jewish people, Hebrew scriptures. And then right after that, flying to Holland for an intensive week of ministry there, then a few days of ministry in Italy. So looking forward to coming away live from Holland and Italy. So Friday we should be doing You've Got Questions, We've Got Answers live from Holland. All going well. I'm not taking calls today, though, so sit back. Take in everything that you can. If you miss any part of the program, go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and just click on latest broadcast as well as latest articles to catch up on what I am saying and writing. Should the church stay out of the culture wars? President Obama, a couple of days ago, was at a panel discussion on poverty at Georgetown University. He criticized churches for how they engage politically, focusing on, quote, divisive issues such as protecting life and preserving marriage. Let me ask you a question. Which is more divisive in American culture, slavery or abortion or same-sex so-called marriage? Which is more divisive? Well, they're all highly divisive, but certainly the issue of slavery and the slave trade was far more divisive. We fought a bloody civil war. More of our men died in the civil war than in all of our other wars combined, right? I mean, it dwarfs the total of losses. You had family members fighting against each other. You'd have a mother who'd lose two sons, one fighting for the North and one fighting for the South. It was a terribly divisive war. It almost completely divided the nation. Well, following this same philosophy, perhaps the church shouldn't have gotten involved in combating slavery. Would our president agree with a statement like that? So, just because something is divisive doesn't mean that we shouldn't focus on it. Often, it means we really should focus on it because it is of such massive importance. I think I got to write on this as well. My article will come out tonight on WorldNet Daily, deals with the larger issue that we're talking about today. Should Christians get out of the culture wars? But I may focus in particular on the president's comments and also the idea that it's either deal with poverty or deal with abortion, either deal with poverty or deal with homosexual activism. Why that dichotomy? And since when has the church's primary call been to deal with poverty? I thought our number one call was the Great Commission to go and make disciples of the nations, to testify of who Jesus is and what he did. You say, okay, well, if that's the case, if that's our number one calling to call people to repentance and faith in the risen Lord Jesus, then why are we involved in the culture wars at all? It's not either or. If our calling is to go and make disciples, then the question is, how do disciples live? Once you've made a disciple, how does a disciple live in the workplace? Would you expect a man who was an alcoholic, violent husband and father, upon becoming a disciple, to treat his wife and children differently and to live differently in his community? Of course. If you led someone to the Lord, a drug dealer in your community, a prominent drug dealer in your community, and this person truly became a follower of Jesus and became a disciple, would you expect that person to live differently? Would you expect them to stop dealing drugs? Of course you would. If you help lead a corrupt politician to the Lord, someone who was infamous for their behind closed doors deals and being bought for influence and things like that, and they really came to faith and were living as a disciple, would you expect them to live differently? You say, yeah, but what's that got to do with the culture wars? What you're talking about is what Pastor Andy Stanley called for. By the way, I think it was a great statement. I commend him for saying that if Christians live like Christians for a year, if Christians quit committing adultery, if Christians quit smoking weed, if Christians quit sinning the way the world sins, the world would look differently. The society would look different. And if we had been living like that the whole time, we wouldn't need to engage in culture wars because the culture would look so different. I agree. The only place where I disagree is that we should take a break for a year from the culture wars while we live like that. Why? Why take a break? Why not live like that along with standing for righteousness in the society? But I come back again to the question of how does a disciple live? Doesn't a disciple live with concern for the orphan and the widow? Yes, well, if you have concern for the orphan and the widow, don't you have concern for the baby in the womb? If you're talking about Old Testament and the calling to care for the orphan and the widow, and to care for those in need and to rescue the perishing, how much of a jump is it from all of those ethical exhortations? How much of a jump is it from there to the calling to care for the unborn that risks being slaughtered in the womb? How much of a jump is it really? When James Jacob gives us the same exhortation that true religion, undefiled before God the Father in this, to care for the fatherless and the widow in their affliction, and to keep oneself unspotted from the world, how much of a jump is it from there to care about abortion? How do disciples live? You say, well, as for me, I spend all my energy winning people to Jesus. Well, do you spend your energy on discipling them? Because the calling is not just to win them to the Lord, but to disciple them, to see them as full-blown citizens of the kingdom of God. And you're telling me that you don't do anything else? You're telling me that you spend every waking moment sharing the gospel with people, that you don't work a secular job at all, that you don't have hobbies or habits, that you don't watch TV or surf the net, that you don't do anything except witness. You say, well, who lives like that? Hey, look, if you do, awesome. God bless you. God bless you for your devotion to the Lord. And I hope you're witnessing to people and then helping establish them in the faith, or at least getting them plugged into churches. But if that's you, well, then don't worry about the culture wars. Just stay on the front lines witnessing every waking moment you have. But the fact is, most of us are not spending all of our energy on witnessing, are we? Most of us are not spending all of our energy so that we don't have time to vote once every couple of years, so that we don't have time to write a letter to a congressman, so that we don't have time once a year to go, hey, go to a gay go to a gay pride event and share the gospel there. You can do that. That's a great way, just in a loving way. Look for people in need because they're in need like everybody else. No different than anybody else. They're in need like everybody else, and go share the gospel. You're not so busy that you can't vote and urge your elected officials to stand for what's right. Or if in your home city there's going to be a bill passed to make all bathrooms gender neutral, or your kid comes home from school crying about a sex ed program and the things they're talking about and how embarrassed they were, you're not so busy sharing the gospel that you can't go and talk to the school administrators and say, this is unacceptable. I need to know when things like this are going to be taught. It's for me as a parent to talk to my kids. I don't want them hearing these things. And are you telling me that as a disciple, you shouldn't do that? That as a disciple, you shouldn't talk to your school officials? You shouldn't vote? I mean, why make this dichotomy? And when it comes to the poor, the church spends far, 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 far more money helping the poor than it does getting involved in other aspects of social action. That's a fact. That's a fact. Should the church get out of the culture wars? When we come back, I'll talk about ways that we can get wrongly engaged. I'll talk about things that are divisive and destructive. But get out of the culture wars. Come on, friends. We're called to be the salt of the earth, the light of the world. As Dr. King said, we're called to be the conscience of the society. That's part of a fundamental calling that we have. In fact, we come back, I want to talk about a great quote from Dr. King, something that he urged decades ago and that much of the church in America has lost sight of. It's so interesting that critics of the culture wars are engaged in the culture wars day and night, and they're often the ones telling us to get out of the culture wars. What does that tell you? Think about it. What does it tell you when the critics of Christians being in the culture wars are active in the culture wars on the other side, and they're the ones telling us not to spend so much time on divisive issues? Little suspect, isn't it?
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
So the president tells Catholic and evangelical leaders, Georgetown University, a panel discussion on poverty. He tells Catholic and evangelical leaders that they should basically not get involved in divisive issues like abortion and same-sex, quote, marriage, instead should focus on redistributing wealth and helping the poor. Wow. Talk about the president speaking way beyond his pay grade and misrepresenting the Christian faith when he spoke of his own Christian faith and speak of these things. Sadly, out of his league in saying these things. Welcome back to the Line of Fire. This is Michael Brown, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. I much prefer, and I deeply resonate with the words of Dr. Martin Luther King on this subject. Listen to what Dr. King said. Where is this quote? I've got it. Here we go. The church must be reminded that it is not the master or the servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state. It must be the guide and the critic of the state, and never its tool. If the church does not recapture its prophetic zeal, it will become an irrelevant social club without moral or spiritual authority. Can I read that again? I've quoted it over the years many a time, but I don't think I've quoted this whole passage from Dr. King in some time. The church must be reminded that it is not the master or the servant of the state, but rather the conscience of the state. It must be the guide and the critic of the state, and never its tool. If the church does not recapture its prophetic zeal, it will become an irrelevant social club without moral or spiritual authority. Isn't there this where we find ourselves today? Isn't this the situation in which, as followers of Jesus in America, we find ourselves today? Now, I believe one of the big problems is that we have gotten wrongly involved in the culture wars, or we have abdicated from getting involved in the culture wars. And on top of that, we have often been a problem in terms of the decline of the culture. A lot of it falls squarely on our shoulders, where we have failed to be the salt and the light, where we have been just like the world. How are we going to change the world if we're like the world? If our young people are having abortions at the same level as the world, how are we going to help bring reformation there? If we're into pornography as much as the world is into pornography, how are we going to help bring reformation there? You say, well, is it our call to bring reformation? It's our call to make disciples of the nation. And as we do, you better believe that's going to bring reformation. And we are called to stand for what's right. And we are called to live differently. Those things should bring about reformation. I find it not just ironic, but sadly hypocritical for the president to be so loudly involved in race issues which are highly divisive in the culture, for the president, who would say that he's a Christian, to make major statements and get involved in symbolic actions on the 50th anniversary of various major milestones in the civil rights movement. And I commend him for doing that. And yet to imply that the church's involvement in the war against segregation was wrong. You say, well, when did he say that? Well, when he said that the church shouldn't focus on divisive issues like abortion or redefining marriage. Well, then by implication, church shouldn't have focused on a divisive issue like segregation. And the church shouldn't have focused on a divisive issue like slavery. What we've done wrongly is engage the culture wars as if they are primarily political, as if the battle between God and Satan is the battle between Republicans and Democrats, as if the way that cultural reformation is going to come about is by getting the right candidate elected, and that's how we're going to win the culture wars. Oh, politics has its place, because these are leaders that have influence. These are leaders who have influence in society. These are leaders who have influence in our culture, no doubt about it. They have influence by who's appointed in our courts. These are major things. Their significance cannot be downplayed for a split second. Absolutely. But voting is down the list of things that I do in my life. I mean, in terms of major activities of my life and focus of my time and my energy and my effort, what is it? You know, one out of maybe like one out of 100, it's maybe 90 in terms of my daily life and what I do and where my energy is spent. I believe in overall our action in society, voting plays a good role. It's somewhere in the top 10 as far as things that are important in terms of impacting the culture. You know, it may be an 8 or a 9 or something like that, or a 7. It's certainly not the top 1, 2, 3, 4 in terms of prayer being right at the top of the list, and living godly lives ourselves being right at the top of the list, and seeking to have godly families, and then reaching the lost, winning the lost, and then feeding the poor, caring for the needy, and things like that, and then standing for righteousness every way that we can. Those would eclipse voting, but voting certainly is important. But in terms of your overall life, how much effort's put into it? And yet, sometimes you get the impression that it's the biggest, most important thing of all. We have fought the culture wars wrongly when we've taken prayer out and made them primarily a matter of our best human efforts. And when we get mean-spirited and nasty, when our posts and our comments sound no better than a nasty political campaign, we have already disqualified ourselves. No doubt about that. But the idea that we abdicate, that we don't fight for the life of the unborn, that we don't stand against gay activism in the schools, that we don't stand for marriage and therefore stand against redefining it. Doesn't it say in Proverbs 13 that the righteous man, the good man, will leave an inheritance for his children's children? Well, how about what kind of society we leave to our children's children? To me, it goes hand in hand with making disciples of the nations and answers the question of how do disciples live. Hey, friends, I want to make a heartfelt appeal to you to add fuel to our fire. The fire of the line of fire and the fire that burns in my heart can burn even more loudly and more brightly to touch more people with your support. We have so many opportunities to expand what we're doing, but the only way that we can do it is with your prayerful support. If you've listened to this show and you're blessed by it, why not make a one-time donation today? Why not call in and whatever, your gift, large or small, will make a difference in the work that we are doing. Or if you can become a monthly supporter, a torchbearer, helping us with a dollar a day or more per month, it would make a massive difference and would help us burn more loudly in this society. You could add fuel to our fire. You could amplify my voice. To join with us, go to my website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, or call 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Line of Fire as we talk about the church's involvement in the culture wars. Isn't it true that at times we have brought reproach to the gospel because of our handling of the culture wars? Yeah, we brought reproach to the gospel by the way we witness sometimes. We brought reproach to the gospel by having scandals among our leaders. We brought reproach to the gospel by just being hypocrites. Lots of things bring reproach to the gospel. It doesn't mean that we get out of ministry. It doesn't mean that we stop preaching the gospel. It means that we step higher. Yeah, we've done things wrong in the culture wars, but that doesn't mean that we step out of our involvement, does it? No, it means that we involve ourselves properly. But friends, it is a myth. It is a myth that we spend all of our energy and all of our attention on culture war issues and we neglect what really matters. Let me ask you a question. Let's say that you listen to Christian radio over a 24-hour period, all right? I'm not just talking about Christian radio that plays music because they won't be having teaching, preaching content, but those stations which also have teaching, preaching content. And then you put on Christian TV, different stations, and you watch that for 24 hours. So you monitor what's being taught, what's being preached over the course of a week. Honestly, how much biblical teaching do you hear or do you see? Some of it's excellent, some sadly may not be. But how much is devoted to teaching the word, seeking to build you up in the faith, seeking to encourage you in the faith, seeking to help you live practically in this world, and how much of it is dealing with abortion? I mean, it's massively the former and not the latter. How much of it is dealing with issues like redefining marriage and homosexual activism? You know how many people will call in and tell me or write to me and say, thank God for the stance that you're taking. Almost nobody else is doing it. Now it's certainly exaggerated to say that nobody else is doing it. Thank God for the Find Family Ministries and for voices that have been addressing these issues long, long before I was. But I am one of the relatively few addressing these things on a regular basis. By the way, it's something that God called me to do. So I'm not doing it as some hero. I'm doing this as part of my calling. But even so, in our congregational life, where I preach once a month at my home congregation, Fire Church, it's rare that I address these issues from our pulpit. And the rest of the leaders, it's rare that they address them. It's not the major thing we talk about all the time. And when we raise up and send out our missionaries over the course of the years that they have with us, they get a heart to stand for what's right. But this is a tiny, 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 tiny part of their overall training and equipping. And they're out on the field. They're out on the field reaching the lost. They're out on the field feeding the poor and the hungry. In your local church, in your home church, over the last year, how many messages did you hear that focused on the issue of abortion? Probably few or none. How many messages did you hear that focused on the issue of homosexual activism? Probably few or none. How many did you hear just Bible exposition? How many did you hear about raising kids or being good moms and dads or how to handle our finances or just opening up the scriptures to learn more about Jesus? Of course, that's the ongoing meat and drink and nurturing and discipling. So the idea that we are primarily focused on the culture wars is just a myth. It's just not true. In point of fact, we are under-focused. In point of fact, in most of our circles, our people are ill-equipped to deal with these things and don't understand the importance of them and don't understand our calling to be salt and light in our society. Or again, as Dr. King put it, to be the conscience of the society. All right, we'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Listen to this quote from Ronald Reagan. I believe it applies to our question about should the church be involved in the culture wars. Reagan said, if we ever forget that we are one nation under God, then we will be a nation gone under. What does it mean to be one nation under God? What does it mean when kids say the Pledge of Allegiance? What does it mean on our coins when we say, in God we trust? What does it mean if we talk about fundamentals of our Constitution and everyone's right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Let's start with life. Doesn't that apply to the baby in the womb? How do we separate our notion of being a nation under God, and not every nation has that mindset? How do we separate that from the role of the church in the society? Shouldn't we be leading the way when it comes to social issues? Shouldn't we be leading the way when it comes to righteousness? Shouldn't we be leading the way when it comes to caring for the poor and the hurting and the needy? You say, well, that's the whole problem. The church doesn't do that. The church puts all its emphasis on fighting these divisive battles and being perceived as anti-gay and hang on. Perhaps it's those who are criticizing and attacking us who call us anti-gay, and then the media repeats that because the media's bias is well known. The secular media is extremely hostile to fundamental biblical values. Polling has been done. Surveys have been done recently with the overturning of the Defense of Marriage Act a couple of years back. There was polling that was done that whereas America was evenly divided on the issue of redefining marriage, the reporting about this issue was 5-1 in favor of redefining marriage. Your average news anchor, massively disproportionate to the population, is pro-abortion. So you're getting skewed reporting of things that if a church simply says, you know, a marriage is the union of a man and a woman, and God didn't design a man to be with a man or a woman to be with a woman, and, you know, a kid should really have a mom and dad, you're anti-gay. Well, holding to biblical values is going to get you branded negatively, and you will be spoken against, and you will be ridiculed, and you will be maligned. It's going to happen. It's just going to happen. What we have to do is reach out to everyone in love. What we have to do is speak the truth in love, get involved with people's lives, care for them, be compassionate, while holding to our moral values. And let me ask you this. Being pro-life, doesn't that make us evil and wrong in the sight of some people? Don't people think that, you know, maybe here's some teenage girl and she thinks, why is the church being so hard on me? You've got some gal that's had a couple of abortions. She's 30 years old. She's a feminist. Why? The church is so primitive. What gives them the right to tell me what I should do with my own body? People are going to get upset with us when we stand for what's right. Look, there were people, I'm sure, in the South who were negatively impacted towards the gospel when Northern Christians fought against slavery. What gives them the right to do that? How judgmental can they be? And it turned them away from the gospel. I mean, that's what's going to happen when you stand up for what's right. When you stand up for human trafficking, stand up against human trafficking, I don't think the traffickers are going to like that. You can't worry about whether people are going to like what you do or not. You've got to do what's right. But look, let's dispel this myth once and for all that we're spending disproportionate amounts of time and energy and resources while neglecting what really matters. Here's an article from May 13th, a commentary in the Washington Post, and it's by Rob Schwartzwalder and Pat Fagan. And Religion News Service has been distributing this. And the authors say this, in an interview with the Washington Post, timed to a high-level summit in combating poverty, Harvard professor Robert Putnam makes an assertion about what he terms, quote, organized religion, its agenda, and the use of its resources. Specifically, quote, the obvious fact is that over the last 30 years, most organized religion has focused on issues regarding sexual morality, such as abortion, gay marriage, all of those. I'm not saying if that's good or bad, but that's why they've been using all their resources for. This is the most obvious point in the world. It's been entirely focused on issues of homosexuality and contraception, and not at all focused on issues of poverty. Well, Schwarzwalder and Fagan say this. This is utter nonsense to the point of absurdity. Broadly speaking, American churches are incredibly generous to the needs of a hurting world. As noted by the Philanthropy Roundtable, in 2009, overseas relief and development supported by American churches exceeded $13 billion, according to path-breaking calculations by the Hudson Center for Global Prosperity. This includes not just evangelical churches, but also Catholic and mainline Protestant congregations, and covers both direct missions work and donations to private relief groups. That compares to $5 billion sent abroad by foundations in the same year, $6 billion from private and voluntary relief organizations apart from church support, and $9 billion donated internationally by corporations. The $13 billion in religious overseas philanthropy also compares impressively to the $29 billion of official development aid handed out by the federal government in 2009. Whoa, did you get those figures? Private foundations, you know, the Bill Gates Foundation and things like that. Private foundations gave $5 billion. Of private and voluntary relief organizations gave $6 billion. Corporations donated, so all the massive corporations in our country donated $9 billion internationally. And our government handed out $29 billion in official development aid. Church giving was almost half of our entire government's giving. And what's that doing? It's helping the poor and the needy. Schwarzwalder and Fagan ask, so what of the apparent targets of Mr. Putnam's dismissive patronizing crack? In 2012 alone, the evangelical relief group World Vision spent roughly $2.8 billion annually to care for the poor, according to World Vision U.S. President Richard Stearns. That would rank World Vision about 12th within the G20 nations in terms of overseas development and assistance. World Vision is only one such major evangelical ministry. Groups such as Samaritan's Purse, Food for the Hungry, World Relief, and many others provide hundreds of millions of dollars in anti-poverty programs at home and abroad. The Gold Standard Accountability Group for Evangelical Ministries, the Evangelical Council for Financial Accountability, represents groups that provide food, medical care, education, adoption services, orphan care, post-prison assistance, substance abuse help, and other critical services at home and abroad. In aggregate, the more than 600 evangelical ministries represented in the ECFA provided more than $9.2 billion in relief assistance, meaning the vast majority of the international giving to help those in need comes from evangelicals proportionately. Catholic ministries here are also vibrant. The Economist magazine estimate of the Catholic Church's estimated $170 billion total U.S. income finds that roughly 57%, roughly $97 billion goes to health care networks, followed by 28% on colleges with parish and diocese and day-to-day operations accounting for just 6%, with the remaining $4.6 billion going to national charitable activities. Wow, I mean, that's a remarkable amount of money coming from the Catholic Church. So what about socially conservative organizations and ministries that advocate around the issues, homosexuality and contraception, abortion, mentioned by Mr. Putnam? Consider a 2011 analysis by David French, a writer and attorney with the American Center for Law and Justice, who prefaces review with these trenchant comments. I chuckle when I hear the common critique of the religious and secular left. Evangelicals are obsessed with gays and abortion. This criticism is so common that it's often internalized and adopted by the church itself. It is, pure and simple, a talking point, and it's demonstrably false comment. and we shouldn't believe it either. The massive amount of our giving goes to general church work and to reach the lost and to help the poor and the needy. A tiny percentage of it goes to deal with family issues and with social righteousness. And it should go to these things. But the idea that it is we're putting all our time, energy, effort into this, it's just wrong. It's just false. I'll give you some data that we come back. And then just want to talk from my heart. No data, no articles. I just want to talk from my heart about why I am involved in these issues and why you should be involved too. So we've got more coming your way. Stay tuned right here on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, I've got one last segment here on The Line of Fire. I want to give you a little more data about this culture wars issue and these misconceptions about things. And then from there, I want to just share from my heart about why I'm involved in these things and why I do believe it is important. So going back to the article by Rob Schwartzwalder and Pat Fagan that completely demolishes the idea that the majority of church resources go to combat abortion and redefining marriage and things like that, as opposed to meeting needs of people, feeding the poor, the hungry, the needy, caring for those around the world who are suffering. They demolish that notion and prove that the opposite is true. But look at this. Back to their article. What about some hard numbers? Of the major national conservative Christian groups that are involved in the political arena, here is a representative sampling of various financial reports. Susan B. Anthony List, 7 million. Americans United for Life, 4.5 million. Family Research Council, 15.2 million. National Right to Life, 6.4 million. National Organization for Marriage, 1.7 million. Focus on the Family, 94.5 million. Alliance Defending Freedom, 38.2 million. So they say, for the sake of argument, let's add in the roughly 40 state family policy councils and generally surmise their budgets together, total 100 million. In aggregate, then, the national organized religious groups indicted by Mr. Putnam, this is a scholar who is indicting the church for putting all of its efforts and energy into combating abortion and redefining marriage and neglecting social issues and feeding the hungry and caring for the poor, put them all together, all right? They account for less than $170 million in total revenue. If you want to be generous, he said, the national state combo is about $270 million, where you have tens of billions of dollars going to fight poverty, going to care for the needy that the church is involved with. So this is just bogus. And let's take Focus on the Family, right, which had the biggest income of all of those. At its height, under Dr. Dobson, when the budget was maybe $130 million a year, and Dr. Dobson was actively addressing issues having to do with homosexuality. When I did work with Focus years ago, spoke at some of their conferences, their leadership told me that less than 3% of the overall budget focused on homosexual issues. And of that 3%, a good portion focused on helping people with unwanted same-sex attraction. So even a budget like that, the vast majority is not focusing even on political issues. It's focusing on how moms and dads can be better dads. And these days, it's how moms can be better dads and dads can be better moms, sadly. But what Focus is doing is trying to get people to have godly families, be able to train their kids the right way and edify them in the Lord. So even if their budget, only a small part is dealing with these issues. And something like the Alliance Defending Freedom, the reason that they have to do what they do is because of constant court cases that we're being brought into. So why am I involved? Why am I involved? is part of my calling. It's part of what burns inside of me. I burn day and night to see the church revived. I could give myself to that day and night to see revival and awakening in our own midst and see us turning to the Lord and pursuing Him. I burn with that. I've written quite a few books on revival and books designed to wake up the church. I burn to see my Jewish people saved. It's always on my mind. It's always on my heart. We're in the midst of major work to get our Real Messiah website translated into Hebrew for major outreach in Israel. I've written 5 volumes on answering Jewish objections to Jesus and other volumes that relate to this, and have taught often in seminaries on these subjects to equip people. I burn to take the gospel to the nations. I've been overseas on ministry trips, more than 150 different trips around the world. In the next few months, God willing, well, a few days, going to Holland, then Italy, and then a few weeks after that, Israel. Then a few months after that, Hungary. Then a month after that, India. And we have grads from our ministry school around the world serving. I burn for that, for the gospel going to the nations. I also burn to see moral and cultural revolutions part of my calling. God has called me to be a voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. God has called me not to stir up trouble in the political realm primarily, not to lead marches down the street with people yelling and screaming and looting. God forbid. The Jesus revolution of which we speak is a gospel-based revolution. It is overcoming evil with good, overcoming hatred with love, overcoming the flesh with the spirit, overcoming lies with truth, but it is part of what God called me to do. It's a major reason He called me to be on the radio. Look, every week, Thursday is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, and Fridays, you've got questions and we've got answers, and Tuesday is often a teaching day where yesterday we open up the Word. What does it mean when it says don't judge? And Monday can be a whole range of subjects we cover based on what's happening in the media. And the one day that we specifically will focus on moral cultural issues is Wednesday. So we're covering a whole gamut of things here. And you're being equipped by God's grace in many, many different ways. But this burns in my heart to stand. Over 10 years ago, God spoke to me. Turn back the tide of homosexual activism. Now, I don't mean that single-handedly that I'm going to do that. I never think that for a split second. I'm a small part of a very big team in terms of ultimately the fine ministries and individuals that are out there. And then throughout the body, we're praying and serving together. But God spoke to me to do that. And I have a role. I have a part. So I'm seeking to be obedient. It's not a coincidence to me that God's raised me up as a leader in this, that I'm on all these hate group lists or hate lists, and He's guilty of this and this and this, because I'm speaking the truth in love. It doesn't surprise me at all. It's part of my calling. And with that calling is the calling to be on the radio as a voice. So this burns in my heart. I can do no other. But it's part of the larger calling. It's part of the larger calling. And for me, it's a platform through which I preach the gospel as well. Would you stand with me, friends? Would you literally hold my hands up on the front lines, becoming a torchbearer? If you're listening to us in Florida right now, if you're listening on the radio in Florida, we have just been given the opportunity to expand to reach 2 million listeners in Florida. 2 million listeners. If you're listening to me on the radio right now in Florida, you're on one of our new stations, but to be on these stations, we need your help. Why not become a supporter? Why not become a torchbearer, a monthly supporter? If you believe in what we're doing, it can get lonely sometimes. Your support makes a massive difference. Right now, pick up the phone, call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Say, hey, I want to be a monthly supporter. Then go to our website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click on donate. Find out all the ways we sow back into you as you stand with us and stand with us today. My bottom line, as the salt of the earth, as the light of the world, you better believe we are called to be a godly influence in the society.